So Kiana Thomason, we have known each other and admired each other's leadership, I would say for probably 4 years, something like
that. Three or four. Mm-hmm.
I approached you because I knew of you. I didn't know you, but I knew of you. And what we're trying to do in this executive ascent is also just teach and coach our group, our cohort, about seeking leaders. I wanted to seek your leadership, and I made a point of meeting you at an Arts KC event, right? I think that's where we met.
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
You were on a number of boards. I point that out. Anyone can look on her LinkedIn profile. She's on a number of boards because she's really good at being a citizen. William Jewell Board Trustee. She's on Arts KC Board. You've been on some policy task forces. You've been a health commissioner. You've been on the City of Kansas City Airport Terminal Advisory Group. So that's like your civic personality. But then there's your day job, which is really been developing over, I'd say, 20 years. So you have your master's in social work, but there's an undergirding to that with analytics and health analytics. And I saw you at SWOPE as a director and a leader there, and I wasn't surprised that Blue Cross stole you away. And you had a very successful 8-year tenure there. I think David Gentile was your CEO. You weathered through a CEO change.
Mm-hmm.
And
true CEO change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you were headhunted out of your role. And
right.
It didn't surprise me because I wanted to be the one that headhunted you. And someone else did, but I was so proud of that. So we watched you transition now to be the CEO at Health Forward Foundation. So today I want you to talk about two broad topics. And I'm getting a little bit of feedback on the line. I know everyone's muted themselves.
Hey, Karen, I think it's your audio. We'll see what it sounds like when you're muted. Because everyone else is muted.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go quick with the introduction. Christine, why don't you drive on the questions then? So the two leadership points I want you to talk about today is mapping your journey as a leader, and then leadership in crisis. Go for it.
Can do. All right. Good morning, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be with you all today. This is a nice diversion for me, as it sounds like it's been for you for many weeks. Very thankful to my girlfriend, Karen, for this invitation. Karen has a way of volunteering you to do things, and that's what I love about her. So thank you, Karen and Christine, for the opportunity to come before this very esteemed, distinguished group. I was perusing your backgrounds and your bios, profiles, and was very impressed with this cross-sector, very diverse lineup of both industries and talent and perspective. So really, really happy to be here with you. So I am going to share some highlights of my leadership journey, which Karen has touched on a bit. I'll provide I would say some high-level encouragement to you as you continue to map your executive ascent. And even if you're already the CEO, as some of you are in a C-suite role, I believe that we never stop leveling up. And so with respect to impact. So I'll share some encouragements there, and then I'll wrap up with leadership in crisis, which is certainly fresh and top of mind for me and a very acute experience these days for me. So I'll share some of what I've been practicing as a leader over the past couple of months with the COVID-19 pandemic. So really briefly, I have over 20 years of cross-cutting leadership around what I call the healthcare trifecta, if you will. Healthcare policy, care delivery, in the safety net space, as well as healthcare payment. And now I'm rounding that off in health philanthropy with Health Forward Foundation. Joined the foundation in late January, so I've had a 3-month crash course in philanthropy in crisis, and it's been a very eventful ride. So prior to being recruited to Health Forward, I spent 8 years at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City, and spent my time in about 3 different roles there over those 8 years, largely around improving the health of populations through alternative care delivery models, payment models, analytics, predictive modeling, data science, that helped us to improve health outcomes while keeping costs managed. Worked in a tandem with primary care practices all across the city, health systems, hospitals, and the Center for Medicaid, Medicare Services, or CMS, for those of you who know healthcare. And I also left Blue Cross in the past year and a half there, driving championship for inclusion of health equity and the social determinants of health into the corporate strategy. So the social determinants of health, for those who don't know, are those factors that contribute to our health and our health outcomes more than healthcare itself. So 80% of our health outcomes are based on social and economic factors, where we live, where we work, where we play. And so our behaviors, our income, our education, our environment, all that stuff contributes to our health more so than healthcare. And so really drove in the social determinants of health and health equity for vulnerable communities and communities of color in my last year at Blue Cross. And I'll talk a little bit about why that's important in a little bit, why that's important to call out. Prior to going to Blue, I spent another 8 years at Swope Health, which is a federally qualified health center serving the urban core of Kansas City with one-stop-shop healthcare. At Swope, I was over half the organization, both in workforce and in revenue. Having a $16 million department in behavioral health, was a clinical director there, and also about 250 associates in my purview there. Being at Swope was nothing short of a blessing for me because I was served by Swope as a kid. Born at Truman Medical Center as a baby, served by Swope Health, who provides services to the uninsured, for all of my childhood and adolescence. So it was a blessing to return to lead the organization as a mid-careerist and lead them through some crisis points very successfully. Prior to that, I spent a few years in policy in the United States Senate under the Senator Carnahan's administration, and really worked across the Health and Human Services constituency landscape, engaging the IT companies, the Cerners of the world, the hospital associations, the child welfare associations, and informing the senator on how to shape and guide her legislative vote. And before that, just did a lot of grassroots social work, old school social work, child welfare, psychiatry, even worked in prison social work. All of my career has been spent on improving the health and the wellness of communities, with particular emphasis on communities of color and those who are underinsured and underserved, which is what Health Forward does. So we provide leadership, advocacy, and resources through grant making, philanthropy, to organizations, our partners, who serve the uninsured and the underserved. So that has by and large been my leadership journey, and every step of the way has certainly been a building block to my next pathway, which leads me into the importance of mapping your executive ascent. So I talked earlier about the fact that many of you have already achieved C-suite positions or CEO positions, and perhaps others aspire to. And for me, leveling up even at this level continues to be important to me, because impact is just as important as the destination and the climb. And for me, that takes being very clear on my purpose. And so as a leader, I think if nothing else, it's very important for us to be connected and to be clear about our personal purpose, why we're here, why we're in the roles that we're in, and how they align with our personal purpose and our value systems. So with respect to discerning purpose, that can be tricky for some when you think about it, but not really when you take time to think about the collection of your values and your experiences. For some folks, purpose is that thing in their heart that they just can't shake, something that they're drawn to. For me, I knew I wanted to help people as early as elementary, middle school. I didn't know what that would look like. But as I continued to nurture that seed of just helping in my heart, I was drawn to healthcare, and I was even more drawn to communities that lived in marginalized conditions. Note that I did not say marginalized communities. Language is very important, and narrative is very important. And so I believe in describing people based on their assets and not their circumstances. And so my personal purpose, at least for this season of life, because it changes, is to improve the lives of people living in marginalized conditions. That's always been in my heart. I didn't necessarily have the language for it, but it's always been in my heart, and my experiences have also complemented that. Coming up through the ranks as a child, as a patient, of what the safety net system is in terms of serving the uninsured and the underserved. So I am now blessed to lead and provide resources through grant making to organizations that serve me. That's so purposeful for me, and it's huge. And so for some people, it's heart, for some people, it's experience. And for me, it was both, coupling what's always been in my heart with my personal experiences. So when you think about purpose for you, I really encourage you to dig deep about what's been in your heart, how has that played out with respect to your experiences, and how might that align with your current role or the destination that you're seeking. I think that's hugely important where the sweet spot is for us to connect our value, our personal values, with the value that we bring a company. So what makes a career opportunity a DNA match with respect to purpose? I think a DNA match is something that Karen mentioned to me as I was talking with her about my current role while I was still in the recruitment process. And she said, Kiana, this is a DNA match for you. And that resonated with me because it was true. But every role along the way that I've experienced has not been a DNA match. But if you know anything about DNA, for those who might be have experiences in the biological sciences, DNA has what's called building blocks and strands that scientifically are called nucleotides. But they're really building blocks and strands that comprise your DNA. And when I think about my journey, every step of the way for me has been a building block, a strand, a nucleotide that has led me to my current position that really is a collection of all of my experiences being part of the underserved community as a patient. The collection of my experiences being a utility player. I've done healthcare payment. I've done healthcare delivery for the uninsured. I've done healthcare policy regarding a TANF or welfare reform, regarding stem cell research, all this crazy stuff. And now I get to really combine all those unique experiences with respect to how philanthropy needs to define and chart its future in terms of being a part of the healthcare ecosystem with a specific intent on serving the underserved. And so all the steps along the way, especially when I went to Blue Cross being a payer, having spent several years in nonprofit, it was a big leap for me. Leaving the nonprofit world and going over to the corporate side was scary, but at the same time, I knew that I wanted to have a diversity of experiences of experience in healthcare, and I want it to be a utility player that's well-rounded and able to be nimble and work and expand my footprint and my purpose. I say that because at Blue Cross, I went with the intent to marry the social determinant of health space that I spoke of earlier to the payer space. They were looking for talent at the time that could help them with innovative strategies that would be community-centric, that would improve the lives of people, and decrease their financial liability for financing healthcare as a payer. Well, no one knows how to do that systemically like an old school social worker. And so leveraging those experiences in social work about connecting with community, thinking outside the bed of hospital treatment and hospital care, and knowing how to drive health improvement outcomes at the community level is what healthcare is all about today. And coupling that with analytics and predictive modeling, I was able to convince a company to include health equity and what was in my heart into its corporate strategy. And I couldn't have done that without having achieved social capital within that organization. And so that means that I had had enough stripes and had enough wins and had a good name within the company to be able to tell them what I wanted to do and how what I wanted to do offered business value for them. So 2 years before leaving Blue Cross, I told my then boss, Dr. Greg Sweat, great guy, I said, Greg, you know what? I'm not telling you I'm leaving, but what I'm telling you is I'm not necessarily connected to my purpose in this role, and I want to spend the remaining time that I have here, if you agree, helping the company improve its bottom line while also making an impact in the community, and here's how. I had enough social capital in the company to do that. And was able to drive that into the corporate strategy before leaving, resource and stand up that team and get it well on its way, which essentially led me to the current role that I'm in now. So I shared all that to say that every role along the way is not a DNA match, but they are building blocks and strands of your DNA that ultimately lead you to that perfect fit, that right fit. I also spoke earlier about how it's important to align your personal values with the value for a company, as in the case of the example with Blue. For me, my personal professional values have always been community, equity, and social justice. And so weaving your personal values into your organizational values really positions you to be in a sweet spot, be more endeared to the mission of your organization, be more invested into the mission of the organization, and allow the organization to see the passion that you have shine through for its work as well. And so if you're not well aligned in that area right now, think about that. For opportunities within your company to get better aligned with your values and your purpose, or externally as well. Karen mentioned earlier meeting me through ArtsKC. I can't underscore how important and vitally catalytic board and commission service is in the life of your career. I think if it weren't for board and commission service, I would not have the deep bench of network that I do in Kansas City, and that's been quite invaluable for me in every role that I've had, at least for the past 10 years or so. So if you're not civically connected right now, seek to be civically connected. Ask Karen, ask your boss, work with your peer group, to get you connected. Make sure people know where your interests lie with respect to civic service, and get out there and get on some boards and commissions. It's deeply, deeply valuable.
Yeah, and a lot of times people will ask about, you know, in addition to talking to your employer about opportunities, what other advice do you have for finding civic boards and opportunities? Because sometimes it's not really very obvious how you do that.
Yeah, sure. And if you don't already have the connection, sometimes it's starting out as a volunteer in some organizations. Oftentimes volunteers are asked to serve on boards. Many organizations extend those opportunities to volunteers. And then, of course, just networking within your company with any mentors or sponsors that you might have within your company who might be more connected is quite important as well.
One other thing before you move on. Karen asked, are there executive sessions or exercises, a process that you use to help align other DNA missions with the company?
There is. And so one of the tools that I'd recommend doing often, and probably maybe every 3 or 4 years because we change, are the personal assessments. So Strengths Finders, Gallup Strengths Finders is a really good tool to get some self-awareness about yourself, which also gets to your values and helps you understand what your strengths are and would be a good tool to help you map your personal assets with the needs of other organizations. So Strengths Finders is one, the Predictive Index, all those types of tools are very helpful. I can't underscore enough how self-awareness about your personal strengths and challenges or gaps as a leader is so important for you to optimize your strengths and cover your weaknesses as best you can.
And Melissa Roberts has a question to ask about kind of balancing your skill sets. Melissa?
Oh, thanks. Hi there. I am also getting my feet under me in philanthropy. So appreciate the conversation. I work at Kauffman.
Where are you? Kauffman, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about your goal of kind of becoming a utility player earlier in your career and your training as a social worker. You know, both of those are kind of like differentiated skill sets. So can you maybe speak a little bit about, as an executive, how you have kind of struck the right balance throughout your career of offering a different point of view that shows the value of those skill sets without kind of becoming contrarian or, you know, kind of constantly disagreeing?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's important for you to kind of set the table for your skill sets in offering feedback to peers, colleagues, and executives. And for me, setting the table starts with a conversation about, you know, healthy dissent is good. The diversity of experience and thought is good. That's what makes businesses great. One of the dangers that businesses has is groupthink. And so when I set the table oftentimes in approaching a conversation, say, you know what, I have a different opinion, and it's this. And I believe that if we did X, we could improve our impact, our reach, our profit, our bottom line, you know, by doing X, Y, and Z. And oftentimes it comes from your unique experiences with what the company is unfamiliar with. So I think it's important for you to be an advocate for an educator for some perhaps intelligence gaps that the company needs, but do it in a way that prioritizes diplomacy, of course, tact, and also that brings others along, okay? No one likes to people that are the smartest person in the room, because you might not be, but you do have great value, valued insight.
Kiana, can you hear me? I'm trying to reach. Yeah. So getting back to Melissa's question again, just one more step. Have you been in executive teams? Because now you're a CEO, so this is a different role. But have you been in executive teams where you've needed to recruit or join in with another peer to be contrarians together to push forward more innovation? Because it is a lonely place to be the only innovator. Tell me how you've been able to do that.
Yeah, I think the importance of teaming and relationship building is what I think is paramount. You can't be the lone ranger in a company. So building those relationships, feeding your own social capital is hugely important. So that means taking time to get to know how your peers, your boss, whoever you're trying to influence, how they think, what's important to them, what motivates them. Getting familiar with that and sharing your personal motivations and values as well. Then you can begin to align and determine and discern win-wins and get on the same page together and talk about where you agree to disagree and where alliances can be drawn oftentimes.
And then Mark Ness. Oh, I was gonna say Mark Ness has also a question about either forming or how you work with a personal board of a directors, personal advisors. Mark.
Yeah, Kiana, thanks for taking a little bit of time. First, a little bit of safety net love. I was the chairman of the board for the KC Care Health Centers in the conversion from the free clinic to FQHC. So thanks for all you do for the community. This is really, really great to have an opportunity to talk with you. But in the nonprofit spirit, as your career has evolved, how have you developed your own personal board of directors and how have they contributed to your path along the way?
Great question. So I think it's been vital for me to get to know the board and have board visibility and exposure. And in every leadership role that I've been in, I've had that opportunity. Really taking the time, especially boards that perhaps are over the committee that you may be the staff liaison to, it's really important to get to know them, spend time with them, take them to lunch, understand what their goals and motivations are for being on the board, how you think, what your role is, how it contributes to the company's business objectives and goals, and be as casual as you can in those conversations. Oftentimes, I found that organizations are so stuffy around their boards. Everything needs to be scripted and planned, and many board members, especially me as a board member, I just want to have authentic exchange with the staff or with the CEO and understand what are your business challenges? What's keeping you up at night? How can I as a board member help you? Because that's their role. They're to be ambassadors. They're to be good stewards. They're to clear the path for the organization. And so I find that authenticity with board members helps. It goes a long way. But you also have to know the political landscape and make sure that you're, of course, keeping your boss and your upline apprised of your engagement, and that, of course, that there's no subversion going on in that process. And bringing them along, making sure that they're aware of business strategies, getting their feedback, because board support is paramount. You ought to always know how your board thinks about something before you walk into the boardroom. They shouldn't be surprised, and neither should you.
Can you also talk about sort of the forming a personal board? Sorry.
A personal board?
Part of the question, I think, was in addition to having those board of directors, those formal board of directors, how do you form sort of a personal mentorship, personal advisors?
So I would even say a career, two or three people in your life that are your career coaches personally, so you can optimize your human potential. That's a pretty direct comment. I can't wait to hear this answer.
So yes, some have been board members. Some have not. I think it's always valuable to have someone in your company that is a sponsor, if you will, has a board member who's a champion for you personally, who is somewhat of a footstool that gives you a platform in the community, but also individuals outside of your company. Iron sharpens iron. And so it's really important for you to develop that network outside of your company as well. because they can give you insight not being as connected to the organization that folks who are in the organization, a sponsor, may or may not have. And so it's really important for that to be more diversified. And for me personally, I had a few sponsors, John Bluford, Truman Medical Center. I was in Ingram's 40 Under 40 in 2013. I ran into him in 2012 at the YMCA of Kansas City doing an executive challenge. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. We were both going to get measured, our biometrics measured. There was a crisis going on at Blue Cross. He was CEO of Truman Medical Center. I was, I think at the time, a senior director in Blue Cross. He asked me about the crisis. And I said, Mr. Bluford, with all due respect, you of all people know I cannot talk about that situation. But how are you this morning? I'm going to whoop your butt in this challenge. That's how I responded. And so from that moment on, we became associates. And when I landed in 40 Under 40, he wrote me a note. And from then on, he became a personal sponsor of mine. So wasn't in my company, wasn't at Blue Cross. Met him in the community. I had enough social capital and handled a situation right that I was somewhat challenged by in that moment. He's been a sponsor ever since. And so I think it's important to realize that these people who are here to lift you and support you can come from a lot of different directions. Some boards, some not, internal, external from the company.
Thank you, Kiana. And John Bluford's a great one. I worked with him a lot when I was at the chamber. He'll definitely challenge you and push you to be better. So Therese had a question about COVID and inequities. Therese?
Hello, Kiana. So first off, I am a former Health Forward Foundation associate. So it's so awesome knowing that you are there and leading the organization, which is really, really great. I actually have two questions after your last statement, if that's okay. The first question is like, given the racial inequities that have been highlighted, because they've always been there due to the COVID-19, how do you see that impacting the work of the Health Forward Foundation moving forward? And then my second question was, as you talked a little bit about personal advisors, how do you see their opportunity or ways to really further cross-cultural mentors and sponsors? Because a lot of times you don't see that cross-cultural mentor or advisor as much. And so in what ways can people foster those types of relationships?
Sure. So with respect to your first question, the COVID-19 pandemic has really elucidated the inequities that are deeply seated in our society. There's an adage that people of color use, and it's that when America catches a cold, people of color catch pneumonia. And that's because of socioeconomic conditions. So philanthropy's role in that is pretty significant and broad. First and foremost, it's important that we craft equity into all of our strategies. And so equity is simply providing everyone a fair and a just opportunity to thrive, which is different from equality. Equality is giving everyone the same thing. Equity is understanding where people are and meeting them where they are and giving them opportunities to thrive. So policy, grant making, and advocacy are the areas in which philanthropy and Health Forward will begin to apply, will continue to apply an equity lens in terms of our resourcing in the community, the policies. We've had very heavy focus on just healthcare policies. Now it's time to go further upstream and work on policies that have health implications. Housing, affordable housing, transportation, livable wage. All of those are policies that impact the social determinants of health and health equity that philanthropy has a significant role to be a player in. So those are just some examples of the path forward for Health Forward, with a particular focus on economic inclusion, as we know that as income and wealth assets improve, so does health. The second part of your question, if you could repeat that for me, please.
Absolutely. So when thinking about a lot of advisors or mentors, even as you mentioned, you know, John Bluford being your mentor, a lot of times we don't see as many cross-cultural mentors at that level. In what ways could individuals or mentors themselves foster that cross-cultural type of mentorship relationship?
So I think, first of all, it's being open to having cross-cultural mentors. We're creatures of habit, and many of us spend ourselves and surround ourselves with folks who look like us. And while that can be a facilitator of belonging, it's not necessarily a catalyst for inclusion. And so I think it's really important for us to be open to meeting people, spending time with people, developing friendships and kinships with folks that don't look like us. That's especially important for people of color because the reality is that it's been a white man's world. And there are assets that they have often experienced and tables that they're at that can open doors that you may not have otherwise been exposed to. And that goes bidirectionally for them as well. And so I think it's important to be open, understand, seek mutual benefit, seek mutual value, put yourself in places and spaces where there's no one that looks like you in the room. And for many people of color in leadership positions, that is our everyday experience.
Thank you. Dave had a clarifying question about social capital. Dave?
Sorry, I didn't mean it. So you've used the word social capital a number of different times as you've talked about your career, and I think that means different things to different people. So I was just curious, in your mind, what is social capital, and what did you do to build it?
So in my mind, social capital is relational currency. The same as a $100 bill, it can be exchanged for a value or is valuable to be exchanged for good or service. Social capital is the same. So relational currency is having a sound reputation that's above board. It's character, it's results, it's behavioral. And so when we think about trust, there are elements of trust that must be intact, and those components are integrity, character, and results oftentimes. People don't necessarily judge you based off of your intent. They judge you based off of your behavior and your results. And so understanding that is really important, and seeking to always put your best foot forward, make those wins, do what you say you're going to do, bring home the results, and your social capital raises with that as you also keep your nose clean from an integrity standpoint and keeping promises and making good on commitments. And so all those things have tied together for me in terms of being able to be influential, being able to have a say and a seat at the table in terms of decision making.
Thank you.
So Kiana, we're at 11:43, and I know there is a big topic of leadership in crisis. So yeah. This is just such a paradigm here. We've got you as an ascending leader, and these are all great topics to date on this call. But now let's just get to crisis, because I can't think of anyone that could be better at this except maybe Mayor Quentin Lucas on this topic in the Metro KC area. So go into a couple of minutes about what crisis, how you've redefined your leadership in crisis in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. So it's, first of all, I'll go back to purpose. So I have talked considerably with my team prior to the crisis about our purpose. Not our mission, not our vision, not even our values, but about our purpose, because it's different. Mission is what we do. Purpose is why we do it. So fortunately, I had seeded those conversations with my team walking in the door. What's our why? What's our purpose? And so with the crisis having hit, I told my team, this is an opportunity that is masked as a crisis. So let's think about our purpose that we've been talking about, and let's find the opportunity in this crisis, which is by and large for our organization, equity, and catalyzing equity in the crisis. So for me, it's been not admiring the problem, but finding the opportunity and connecting it to purpose. It's also been important with my team to provide clarity very often on how we are going to connect this crisis to purpose. And then engaging them around the tactical steps and the strategies that we've employed over the past 2 months to do that. It's also been making sure that we're very clear in working with my communications director and team around internal and external communications and communications with governance and the board. In crisis, when people don't know what's happening, they imagine the worst. So if you are not crafting the message of what's happening, what we're doing about it, how it's going, why we're doing it, then you're missing a significant opportunity and you are at risk of individuals assuming that nothing is happening. And so communication has been really important. Knowing that that bi-directional spotlight is on you and it's also on your team, and being okay with that and embracing that. So that bi-directional spotlight is an opportunity for you to rise and for you to shine and also see who on your team is going to rise and shine, which as a leader, you're thinking about succession planning and who's ready to level up in the next weeks, months, years. I'd also say that it's been hugely important for me to still maintain strategic thinking time. It's really tempting to allow a crisis to subvert more longer term strategic thinking. And you have to defend against that as a leader. And so that's going back to your why. There, we decided to use $3.7 million and dedicate that to the stabilization and resiliency of our community at Health Forward. There are also more dollars that we could apply to this, but there's some more strategic things that connects us to the economic and health recovery around equity. That's also important. So I've been very clear with my board. Yes, I could apply these dollars to emergency funds, but I'm safeguarding these dollars for strategic thinking about economic recovery for our community past this crisis. So don't let a crisis subvert or overshadow your strategy and being connected to your longer term purpose. And you have to create some time for that. And as Karen mentioned, create some time to put the oxygen mask on yourself. Like they tell us on the plane, in a crisis, if we start to go down, put the oxygen mask on yourself first, then help the person next to you. And so that's been very important for me to do, maintaining my walks with my mom, reading my word, my Bible, in the morning, making sure I spend time with my kids and virtual happy hours with my girlfriends. So all that oxygen mask has been helpful. The last thing I'll say about a crisis is make sure you celebrate and socialize wins with your team often. They need those accolades and those attagirls and attaboys. Don't be so focused on getting through it that you're not celebrating them and thanking them.
To what degree do you think you've amplified communication? So let's say in a normal period, it's 100% you're communicating. Are you now at 200 to 300%? Is it more simple? I mean, just give us a little bit of forward thinking for the next 60 days. Where do you think you are in that? Go ahead.
Yeah. Communication has probably been at 500%. We've been more communicative with our grantees, our partners, my blog, and my board. I'm giving my board a weekly update in terms of what is happening in the organization and some behind the scenes components to our work. I met with my board very early on to say, hey, these are my approval limits. This is my authority. That's business as usual. This ain't business as usual. This is what I need. I told my board chair, I need you to clear a path. I don't need to be bound by governance structures. I need to move, okay? And have been communicating, got that authority from my board with respect to spending, and have been communicating with them to make sure that they know they can trust me with that every week. Here's what's going on. Here's how we're moving. Internally with the team, meeting every week, a touch base, a touch point, a huddle, all hands on deck, but not too much. Externally, making sure that we are touching base with our grantees virtually, written communications, and our program officers are checking in on our grantees very often, making sure that they are very clear, that we're there to support them, and making sure that our messages are crystallized, short, simple, succinct, and to the point. What we need to know, why we need to know it, and what do you want us to do next are the questions that we're asking ourselves before, as we approach a communication to our board, as well as to our partners. And the last thing I say is external communication is important to focus on. What do people want to hear and what do people want to know, not what you want to say.
Great. We're going to wrap up here in just a minute. Gwen, I was going to ask a question while we're kind of looking for our final one. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in Kansas City with the COVID from your perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. So clearly COVID-19 has destabilized many industries, but it's certainly taken a significant hit on healthcare providers and nonprofit organizations. I think healthcare providers, you've heard that in the news. Nonprofits have lost significant revenue. No annual fundraising events have happened. They were all planned for the spring. And so everyone is operating at a deficit right now. So it's been important for us to support our organizations with a lot of emergency dollars, flexibility and core operating dollars versus programmatic dollars. What we're generally seeing in the community is increased domestic violence, increased child abuse, food insecurity that was already present has become exacerbated. Housing security has become exacerbated. All of those social determinants of health that I spoke about earlier have now been heightened, and folks are in the trenches, and it's, of course, affecting their health, their mental health, and their well-being. Social isolation, of course, has increased. Everyone is not fortunate enough to be able to work from home like you and I are. Everyone doesn't have the virtual connectivity and the virtual access. There's a digital divide in our community with respect to virtual connectivity and access. So the complexity of all of these things has not only affected our grantees, but is affecting the everyday individual. With disparities, we are seeing that confirmed COVID-19 cases in Kansas City are really centralized in the urban core, predominantly the 3rd District. The 3rd District is where I was born and raised, 28th and Paseo for me, and it's most impacted. No surprise, but it's nonetheless disheartening. So in public health crisis, we often see people of color because of socioeconomic circumstances be adversely affected. We're certainly seeing that trend across the country as well as in Kansas City.
Thank you. Dave had a question.
So I was just curious, coming out of the COVID crisis, what do you think is going to be the most fundamental change or learning for the healthcare system that we're going to have to modify going forward to prevent, not prevent, but to be able to react better to a similar crisis? Because it will come.
It will come. I think at a macro systems level, where policy level, where I tend to spend my time thinking, it's about the repairing the fragility and the fragmentation in the state federal relationship with respect to how healthcare is coordinated, financed, and provisioned at the state and federal level. You're seeing it play out in the media that there is the states competing with one another for resources, and the federal government is disassociating from its states. and has not constructed a system that makes sense for us to work together as a nation. So I think it we must see some repair of that and some strategies for us to be able to respond as a country in a coordinated fashion for public health crises, especially since we know we'll more than likely have another spike in the fall. I think at the local level, we will begin to see more clinical integration like we have been seeing in a very limited way for the past several years. That means not necessarily M&A activity or mergers and acquisitions, but clinical integration. How can systems partner with one another to fortify themselves for such crises, whether it be with procurement and supplies and equipment, or whether it be for payment population management. So whatever that is, you'll begin to see more clinical and maybe even some administrative integration between organizations. I also think that we'll begin to see the inclusion of non-traditional healthcare funders like philanthropy have a bigger seat at the table with respect to helping the healthcare ecosystem drive the policy change that it needs. Money doesn't solve everything, and resources don't solve everything. People do. And so it's important that philanthropy's advocacy around policy be strengthened in this time with the healthcare system.
Thanks. Melissa has a question about the intersection of entrepreneurship and healthcare. Melissa.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for allowing me to ask too. My question is really, you know, I see the conversation happening in the public health space around social determinants of health, and then I see conversations happening in different circles around support for entrepreneurship. You know, where do you see potential for intersectional work, specifically in Kansas City? Do you see any opportunities there?
For the entrepreneurial sector and the nonprofit or philanthropy sector?
Yeah, for, yeah, kind of the public health world and the entrepreneurial world.
I do. I think we're beginning to see more social entrepreneurship occur all throughout the country. That's a pretty significant trend. Traditionally, entrepreneurialism was really steeped in, you know, personal profit and fund development, personal advancement, you, yourself, your company. Now we're beginning to see entrepreneurs focus on social causes, social needs, social justice, equity, all those different types of things, even if it's environmental justice. All these different types of focus areas that are more social in nature, that focus on lifting people and meeting the needs of people and families. And so I think it's a wonderful niche, and we're even beginning to see financing venture capitalist companies begin to back more social entrepreneurism.
Thank you. Well, we're going to wrap up here in just a second. Thank you, Kiana, so much for spending this time with us. I know you're super busy. I did want to just wrap up with a kind of a final question for you as far as Health Forward is doing amazing work. You're doing amazing work. Is there something beyond just staying at home that we could do to help?
Absolutely. So I think, of course, if you have the capacity to donate, there are a lot of organizations that are in need right now. And so the nonprofit community could use your actual capital. They could also use volunteers, their workforce right now. Many folks are unable to pay their staff. And so volunteerism is critical right now in Kansas City as well. And then, of course, board service and alignment. Look for those organizations who are in dire need right now. Understand where your passions lie and connect those dots and get engaged.
Thank you.
Well, I would, I mean, Kiana, just for you to be able to spend an hour with us, it makes it real for Kansas City leadership. And I encourage everyone on this cohort to send Kiana LinkedIn. I just link in with her. I sought you out because I wanted you in my personal world, and we sought out everyone in this cohort because we want to be in their personal world. I wish you much good luck in the next coming weeks. You know my cell phone, so call me as you need us. And looking forward to everybody to next week with Zane Burke, you know, the newest IPO CEO in Kansas and Missouri in health tech, will be blessing us next week. So Kiana, keep up the good fight.
Thank
and we're
you.
Right there with you.
One last thank you. One last thing. If you didn't already have social capital, you wouldn't be here. So work it.
All right. Everybody.
Thank you.
Happy week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.